You are tuned to WMRW LP Warren, independent as a hog on ice. Freeform, community access radio broadcasting on 94.5 FM, streaming at WMRW.org.
The following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, Rootsworth.
Rise and shine, everyone. How's it going out there? This is Amy, and it is time for episode number 183 of Amy's Kids Show. And today we are going to keep celebrating inventors. Inventors who have invented all sorts of interesting things all around us all the time. See, we humans, we are so lucky. We not only are incredibly creative, but we also know how to share our creations with each other. And it's those sparks of creativity, those ideas that get passed on between us and through time to generations and generations after us. Those sparks of creativity, those ideas are floating around out there all the time. Do you ever get any? I know I've captured a few in my mind before that have just gotten me so excited when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it seems like, we have this idea come into our minds, an idea we've never thought of before, and it can make it so amazing. It's so amazing to me how this works. These ideas that are just floating around there for the taking. Well, they tend to come when we're sort of spacing out, relaxing, thinking of other things, but they are also based on hard work and experience. Yes, it's true. It's true. One thing that inventors have in common is they work pretty hard at their ideas. Yes, they experiment. They take things apart and put them back together to see how they work. They ask questions and they observe the results of their experiments to find out what was right, what was wrong, and a lot of them are bad ideas, and that's okay. That is just part of the creative process. In fact, Thomas Edison, he was able to do a lot of his inventing because he had a night job, which left him free all day long to do his experiments all day long. And we're going to meet an inventor today. In fact, today's show is dedicated to the man who invented television. And believe it or not, he invented it when he was still young. He was about 14 years old when the idea came to him. It's an amazing story today. We're going to read The Boy Who Invented TV, the story of Philo Farnsworth, because he was inspired by inventors who came before him. And who is Philo going to inspire today? Maybe one of you. Let's get started.
Thank you.
Well, folks, maybe you can be an inventor. That's what our show is about today. It's about getting inspired by the inventors who came before us, because they were inspired by the inventors who came before them. I mean, that's just how it works, right? We pass these sparks of ideas down between us and for future generations to come. So today, I'm going to read a story about the boy who invented TV. This is the story of Philo Farnsworth. Maybe some of you listening out there have a TV. Do you have a TV in your house? Have you ever wondered who invented this amazing thing, right, that can send pictures through the air to people everywhere? Well, Philo Farnsworth is the guy who did it. He invented the television. We're going to find out how he did it. And we're going to find out where he was when he had that great idea of his. And maybe when we get to that part of the story where he gets his great idea, maybe you can almost fall out of your chair the way he almost fell out of his when he had the idea. That'll tell everybody that that we're at that amazing part of the story where the spark of ingenuity came into his brain and he discovered television. All right, here we go. This book is called The Boy Who Invented TV, The Story of Philo Farnsworth by Kathleen Krull. Life before Philo. Imagine what it was like growing up on a farm in the American West of 1906. With electricity rare out on the in the country, chores would take up most of your day. No refrigerators, no cars, few phones, hardly any indoor bathrooms even. Long distances separated you from your friends and your relations. Meeting up with others took some effort. You rode a horse or you walked. There were trains, but riding or even seeing one was a big deal that not everybody had experienced yet. Getting news was another challenge. What government leaders were doing in Washington, the latest in the arts and sciences, whether sports teams were winning or losing, new information of any kind, it trickled in haphazardly by mail. And not many people had books, and even libraries were few and far between. Let's face it, it was a bit lonely back then. Well, what about fun? Well, movies? No. Radio? No. It was only on military ships. There was music, if you played your own instruments. There were no malls to go hang out at. And when you had enough money saved up to buy a bicycle or roller skates, you ordered from the Wish Book. That was the Sears Roebuck mail order catalog. And there was no television. That's right, no TV. In 1906, inside a log cabin on a farm in Utah, a boy was born who would change things. His name was Philo Taylor Farnsworth. No sooner did Philo Farnsworth learn to talk than he asked a question. Then he asked another one, and another one. His parents answered as best they could. Noticing Philo's interest in anything mechanical, his father took the three-year-old boy to see a train at a station. At first, Philo was afraid this huge, noisy thing might be a monster. But the nice engineer invited the boy up into the cab with him, explaining a bit about how steam-powered trains worked. That night, Philo sat at the kitchen table and drew detailed pictures of what went on inside the motor of a train. Two new machines captivated Philo as he grew up. One was a hand-cranked telephone, purchased by a neighbor. Holding the phone one day, hearing the voice of his beloved aunt, 6-year-old Philo got goosebumps. After all, his aunt lived a long ways away. Another neighbor brought a hand-cranked phonograph to a dance. Music swirling out of a machine. It was almost impossible to believe. "These things seemed like magic to me," Philo said later. Besides being incredibly clever, the new inventions brought people together in whole new ways. Philo's father shared his wonder. On clear summer nights, as they lay in the grass and gazed at the stars, his father told him about Alexander Graham Bell and the telephone, Thomas Edison and the phonograph. Inventors. These became Philo's heroes. Away on a temporary job, his father appointed Philo, the oldest of 5 children, as the man in the family. Philo was 8 years old at the time. This meant, being the man of the family, that his many chores now included feeding the pigs, milking and grazing the cow, fetching wood for the stove. Oh my goodness, but he did get to have his own pony finally, a pony named Tippy. It was also a sort of reward to skip school for a while. Bullies there teased Philo about his unusual name. Shy and serious, Philo didn't fight back. He found it far more appealing to practice reading with his grandmother's Sears and Roebuck catalog. The catalog had toys, as well as cameras, alarm clocks, and machines that used a new, invisible source of power. Electricity, it was called. In his spare time, Philo raised lambs and sold them. When he had enough money saved up, he visited his grandmother to pick a bicycle out of her catalog. But somehow, his grandmother talked him into ordering a violin instead. Philo did love the sound of music, its orderly rhythms. And even at age 10, he dreamed of being famous. Maybe he could find it by creating music like what he heard on the neighbor's phonograph. Soon, Philo was performing in dance bands, making $5 every Friday night. Wow, when he was only 10 and 11 years old. Playing the violin was one more thing, though, that the bullies would tease him about. Well, then, one day, Philo fought back. And the teasing ended. Trying for a better life, the Farnsworths moved from Utah to an Idaho farm with fields of beets and potatoes. 11-year-old Philo drove one of their covered wagons, carrying a crate of piglets, a cage of hens, his violin, and their new prize possession, a phonograph of their own. Arriving in the Snake River Valley, he noticed something up in the air. Power lines! Their new home was wired for electricity. A generator ran the lights and water heater, the hay stacker and the grain elevator, and other farm equipment. And up in the attic was another welcome surprise. A whole shelf of old popular science magazines, with thrilling articles about magnetism, electricity, and those new magic boxes, as they were called. We call them radios. Philo promptly claimed this as his bedroom. His chores began before dawn, but he trained himself to wake up an hour early so he could switch on the electric light and read in bed. Any spare money he had went to buy more magazines. That's when he saw the word television for the first time. It meant a machine that was something like a radio, only it sent pictures instead of sounds. It didn't actually exist yet, but scientists were racing to invent one. Well, the electric generator was really handy, but it broke down a lot, and repairs were costly. Each time the repairman came to fix the generator, Philo bombarded him with questions. What? Why? How? After yet another breakdown, Philo set out to fix the machine himself. So he took it apart. He cleaned it and put it all back together. When he pressed the on button, it worked. Well, Philo's father was enormously proud of him. From then on, he was the Farnsworth's electrical engineer. Philo tinkered with broken motors, reels of wire, old tools. He devised gadgets to hook up to the generator, anything to make his chores easier, like installing lights in the barn. His least favorite thing was washing clothes, because that meant hours of standing while pushing and pulling the lever that swished the water around the washtub. So he attached a motor with pulleys to the lever to make it churn on its own, which left him extra time to read. When he was 13, Philo entered a contest sponsored by Science and Invention magazine. Using what he'd learned about magnets, he pictured an ignition lock that would make the new Model T Fords harder to steal. When he won the contest, Philo spent the prize money on his first pair of proper long pants. Wearing the boyish short pants at the Friday dances was just plain embarrassing at this point. He looked very stylish in his new long pants. Philo went on investigating television. An article called "Pictures That Fly Through the Air" stimulated him. Scientists were having no luck. So far, their ideas resulted in crude mechanical devices that used whirling disks and mirrors. Philo doubted any disk could whirl fast enough to work. Much better to do the job electronically. To harness electrons, those mysterious, invisible particles that traveled at the speed of light. One bright sunny day, 14-year-old Philo plowed the potato fields. It was the best chore for thinking. Out in the open country, by himself, back and forth, the plow created rows of overturned earth. He looked behind him at the lines he was carving, perfectly parallel. Then he almost fell off the plow seat. All his thoughts fused together. Instead of seeing rows of dirt, he saw a way to create television, breaking down images into parallel lines of light, capturing them and transmitting them as electrons, then reassembling them for a viewer somewhere else. If it was done quickly enough, people's eyes could be tricked into seeing a complete picture instead of the lines of electrons buzzing back and forth. Capturing light in a bottle was how he thought of it. Using electricity, not a machine with moving parts inside. Philo's grin was wide. He told the idea to his father, who tried to understand, but couldn't keep up with his son. Well, that's okay, because in the autumn, Philo started high school, riding horseback 4 miles each way to get there. Mr. Tolman, the senior chemistry teacher at the high school, noticed that this freshman named Philo devoured books the way other students ate popcorn. He started tutoring Philo, coming in early and leaving late. One day, Mr. Tolman passed by a study hall and heard loud talking. Philo's latest hero was Albert Einstein, with his controversial new theory of relativity. Now Philo stood at the front of the room, enthusiastically explaining it to his classmates, step by step. Usually, Philo spoke little and with a halting voice. But when he could share his knowledge of science, he was a different boy. Philo had been aching to discuss the idea he'd gotten in the potato field with someone who might understand. One day, he finally told Mr. Tolman, his teacher. All over the blackboard, Philo drew diagrams of his television idea. His teacher was boggled. So Philo ripped out a page of the notebook that he always kept in his shirt pocket. He scribbled a diagram of an all-electric camera, the kind of converter that he envisioned using for a television. An image dissector, he called it. Well, Mr. Tolman pointed out that it would take a lot of money to build such a thing. The only way he could think of helping was to encourage Philo to go on to college. But Philo was forced to quit college at 18 years old after his father died. By then, the family had moved back to Utah, to the town of Provo, and Philo supported his family by working at all sorts of jobs in nearby Salt Lake City. Well, his favorite job was repairing radios. Though commercial radio broadcasts had started 4 years earlier, Philo couldn't believe in 1924 how many people still hadn't ever heard one. So on weekends, he organized radio parties so his friends could gather around one of the bulky wooden cabinets and listen to the new stations. Pem Gardner, the girl next door, was interested in radio, and she was also interested in Philo. Wasn't it funny, Philo remarked to Pem, how they liked to watch the radio, even though there was nothing to see? Radio was such a fine way to bring folks together, and television, he sensed, would be even better. Thanks to his obsession with television, Philo had already lost one girlfriend who had called him too much of a dreamer. But Pem cheered him on. Now, what he needed was money. So He grew a mustache to look older, bought a new blue suit, and started to call himself Phil. He met two California businessmen, and over dinner one night, he took them through a step-by-step explanation of his image dissector, a camera tube that would dissect an image into a stream of electrons, converting them into pulses of electrical current. A receiver would capture the current, then convert it back into points of light, the original image. As he talked, Phil got more and more passionate. After scanning images line by line, just like rows in a potato field, his machine would beam them into homes everywhere. That was the best thing about television, he said. It would let families and whole communities share the same stories. By making people less ignorant of each other, he went on, it would teach and inspire, maybe even lead to world peace. Well, the two businessmen exchanged looks, then agreed to put up $6,000 so Philo, aka Phil, could build the first model television. They gave him a year to make it work. Well, a year is not very much time, not enough time to put together a television. So Philo hit upon a way to work 24 hours a day. So he set himself problems to solve while he was sleeping. He didn't even stop to sleep, if you look at it that way. He filed for several government patents as well. See, that would protect his ideas for the next 17 years. He would have 17 years to keep control over his television invention, to get credit, and hopefully make a little money off of it, too. Well, on their wedding night, he turned to his love, Pem, and he said to her, I have to tell you, there is another woman in my life, and her name is Television. Well, Pem was fine with that. She loved the idea, too. She helped out. In fact, their first lab was their dining room table in Hollywood. And Pem learned to use a precision welder to make tube elements. Everything had to be built from scratch. When they needed a break, they went to one of the new talking movies to relax. And probably get inspiration, too. Finally, they got the lights, wires, and tubes to work in unison. But at the first demonstration, Philo forgot one item. He failed to take the power surge into account. The entire image dissector exploded. Pem, who took notes about everything, labeled this experiment Bang Pop Sizzle. Well, still, Philo was able to find new investors who gave him another year to keep working. So even though it appeared to be a failure, it was not. It was just one step on the way to success. At his new lab in San Francisco, Philo met the deadline. In 1927, a small group of people watched as the first image in history flickered on a TV. He said, "That's it, folks. We've done it. There you have electronic television." Well, that first image was not fancy. It was a straight line, blurry and bluish. Later, he was able to show a dollar sign, and then the motion of cigarette smoke. The first person to be televised was his true love, Pem, who didn't even know she was on camera and had her eyes closed. The following year, in front of a crowd of reporters, 22-year-old Philo Farnsworth announced the invention of television. That night, he was behind the wheel of a borrowed car. He and Pem were heading home after catching a movie with another couple. They stopped by to buy the San Francisco Chronicle from a newsboy. And there was a photo of Philo holding his invention on the front page. The article praised a, quote, young genius for creating a, quote, revolutionary light machine. Pem and his friends read it aloud, bouncing up and down, yelling. But Philo was silent, with a big smile across his face. He was a real inventor, like his heroes, someone who connected people, a shaper of the world to come. Thanks to him, the future would include TV. The end.
Sing. My great-grandfather really was the most famous man no one's ever heard of.
And sir, how old were you when you invented television, or the first television machine as we know it today, first television system?
I was 14.
14 years old.
It's hard to imagine the world my great-grandfather was born into in 1906. No computers, no cell phones, no cars, no airplanes, and certainly no television. When he was growing up in a log cabin in rural Utah, his primetime entertainment was staring at the moon and dreaming of the future. An electric generator and a stack of science fiction magazines fueled young Philo's imagination. Then, in 1920, at the age of 14, while harrowing a field behind a team of horses, he had a revelation. If he could train an electron to do what horses were doing and go to the end of a row, turn around, and start over, he could send pictures through the air. The next year he entered high school, and he tried to talk his way into a senior science class by describing his dream of an all-electronic television. His teacher had no idea what he was talking about, but agreed to tutor him and saved the very first drawing of a television camera. By 19, Phil had attracted investors, built a lab in San Francisco, and proposed to his sweetheart, Elma.
He says, another woman in my life. Well, before I could faint, he said, and her name is television. The only way I see that we would have as much time together as I'd like is if you work with me. How about it?
On September 7th, 1927, with my great-grandma at his side taking notes, Philo successfully transmitted an electronic image for the first time.
I was so excited. I was dancing around, and Phil was... I knew from the shaking hands that he was very emotionally impacted. But he said, well, there you've got television. That was what he said. The backers said, Farnsworth, when are we going to see some money in this thing? Phil had painted a dollar sign on a slide, and that's the first thing they saw, was a dollar sign.
By 1934, he was ready to demonstrate television for the first time. Philadelphia's Franklin Institute was overflowing with people wanting to see his new miracle. Although the screen was only about a foot in diameter, the crowds were transfixed and refused to leave.
We didn't realize how hard it was to keep live pictures going on television yet. We had everything from trained dogs and bears, ventriloquists and puppet shows. And there was one clear night and a full moon, and Phil turned it on the moon, and that got more of a response from the public than anything. The headline was the moon sits for its first portrait.
Take a picture of the moon above in May or June, then you can make a love morning, night or noon by the light of...
RCA said, no person, no boy of 15 could come up with that complicated a concept. So Phil went to the patent office and he said, we need a ruling on this. They asked Phil if he had told anyone about his television ideas. Phil's old chemistry teacher, Justin Tolman, produced a page of Phil's notebook where Phil had made a drawing of the camera tube. And so RCA had to give in on that idea. Therefore, they made a ruling that Farnsworth was the original inventor of electronic television. He said, this is the first time RCA has ever taken a license.
This would be the place for a happy ending, except for a tragic twist of fate. By the time a TV standard was finally agreed on, the world was at war. The U.S. government shut down television development and converted the factories to produce radar.
Phil was well aware that there was a war coming, that probably his patents would be expiring before that ended, or right around shortly after. And this was very depressing to him. He had put his whole soul and life into getting television to the public.
Phil Farnsworth continued to invent. He earned over 300 patents worldwide. If his atomic fuser had been successful, we might all be flying around in nuclear cars by now. He should be a household name, but despite a cartoon descendant on Futurama, he's not. Unfortunately, Philo T. Farnsworth never profited from his invention. He was squeezed out and did not participate in the growth and development of his beloved television. But he refused to watch the thing. Then on July 20th, 1969, a miniature version of his original image dissector was used to beam live pictures back to the Earth from the moon.
We were watching it when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon. Phil turned to me and he says, "Pam, this has made it all worthwhile." Before then, he wasn't too sure.
As a child, I remember being cradled in my great-grandmother's arms, asking her to tell me about Philo and everything he had achieved. This has encouraged me to continue sharing the truth about Philo, and I believe it will inspire a new generation to also believe anything is possible. My name is Jessica, and I'm proud to be the great-granddaughter of both Philo T. Farnsworth and Elma Pem Farnsworth.
Sky blue, who developed the letter B? How do birds fly way above the trees? Where do stars go when the sun comes up each day? How do horses stay so large on the E notes and pay? When things like this happen to cross your mind, there's only one sure way to find out who, what, where, when, why, and how. You got to ask questions, you got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you want to find out, you got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you ask the right questions and listen for the answers, if you ask the right questions, you're gonna find out. The only silly question is the one that you don't ask. Don't be afraid to question when you're learning a new task. Knowledge is only gained if you seek it out yourself. Ask someone who knows more or take a book down from the shelf. Just like a great detective, always looking for a clue. If you need to know something, there's one thing that you can always do. You got to ask questions, you got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you want to find out, you got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you ask the right questions and listen for the answers, if you ask the right questions, you're gonna find out. You gotta ask who, you gotta ask what, you gotta ask when, you gotta ask where, you gotta ask why, you gotta ask how. You gotta ask how. You got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you want to find out, you got to ask questions, you got to ask questions. If you ask the right questions and listen for the answers, if you ask the right questions, you're gonna find out. You're gonna find out. You're gonna find out. You're gonna find out. Yeah, you're gonna find out.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine, who made me happy, big father. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine, who made me happy, big father. You never know that I'm talking about you. Every day, I'm talking about
you. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine, you make me happy, when skies are gray. You never know that I'm talking about you. 'Cause I'm there.
Have you ever heard someone say, treat others like you want to be treated? What were they talking about? Let me tell you in one word. Respect. That's right, respect. Let's explore that on this episode of Rocket Kids. I'm Morgan, and let's get this started. People show respect in many different ways. They speak and act kindly. They listen to others. They accept others for who they are. The list goes on and on, but it comes down to this. They're just nice. And nice is so much.
Like you want to be treated.
Like you want to
treat others like you want to be treated.
Like you want to be treated.
Like you want to be treated.
Treat other people the way you want to feel. Treat other people like your friends. Make them smile and laugh and you'll be smiling too. Just follow the good old golden rule. There's a golden rule out there for us to follow. It's kind of like a road to happiness. If I be nice to you, and you be nice to me, we can live our lives in peace and harmony. Treat other people the way you wanna feel. Treat other people like your friends. Make them smile and laugh and you'll be smiling too. Just follow that good old golden rule. The golden rule will work for you at school. The golden rule works wonders when you're home. It'll keep on working great for you. The golden rule your whole life through wherever we may roam. Treat other people the way you wanna feel. Treat other people like your friends. Make them smile and laugh and you'll be smiling too. Just follow that good old golden rule. Treat other people the way you wanna feel. Treat other people like your friends. Make them smile and laugh and you'll be smiling too. Just follow that good old golden rule. Or just follow that good old golden rule. Or just follow that good old golden rule. We're gonna follow that good old golden rule. I'm gonna follow that. 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 I'm gonna follow that.
Right, well, this is which direction, about 60 times a second. They can travel thousands of miles with a wire intersection. Start with a million volts, shifted down to just 120. Single power point could be the power source of just so many. Lots of humble star. And I'm glad you're humble about it, but not even though we're power, they won't want to live without it. The future is electric. You're invited now if you thought you were in.
It's just you not admitting that you're wrong.
Well, agree to disagree about agree to disagree.
The future is electric.
AC will lead to casualties.
DC sounds fine for batteries.
What's the effects of all the shock?
Holy moly, why would you do that?
To prove a point.
And what point was that?
What were we talking about?
The future is electric. You're invited now if you thought you were in.
Well, folks, we did it. We came to the end of another episode of Amy's Kids Show, and we were celebrating today. We were celebrating those sparks of ideas that fly through time and that various inventors all over the world all the time are picking up on and carrying forward and experimenting with and making discoveries of their own and sharing their ideas with each other in books and magazines and now over television too. Over television, everybody. Thanks to Philo. Philo Farnsworth, we thank you today for inventing TV when you were only 14 years old. And did anybody catch in the story when Philo almost fell out of his seat because he had the idea to send electrons through space and then reorganize them on the other end in your pictures, in your television, so you can see the pictures that were flying through space. Where was he when he had that great idea? Do you guys remember? Was he working hard in his laboratory? Was he experimenting with machines? No. He was plowing the potato field. I love that. He was plowing his potato field. What a perfect and beautiful place to be when you have the most amazing idea of your life, right? Well, that's how it felt to him. It was the most amazing idea of his life because even though he went on to come up with more than 300 other patented inventions through his lifetime, he really felt that that television idea was the best one. And do you know why he was so interested in inventing television? Do you remember what he said to his investors when he met with them with the name Phil and he got them to invest in his idea? Did he want them to invest in it to make him rich or to make them rich? Or to be the best, or to be famous. No, he invented television because he wanted people to come together. He wanted world peace. Well, isn't that the best motivation of all? And you guys out there, what's your motivation? Do you have some good motivation like that? Do you want to improve the world? Do you want to make things better for people? I'm sure you do. I am absolutely positive that there are so many of you out there right now who are just bouncing in your seat. You're just so excited, right? And full of energy. That's what kids are, right? We're always saying that. You kids, you have too much energy. Well, guess what? You don't have too much energy. You just need to get going and put it to some use, right? Get out there and and experiment, explore, plow the potato field, do whatever it is that you need to do today, and you will get inspiration. Sparks of creativity coming your way. I guarantee it, because you're the greatest.